Jeremiah chapter 46, and the song that Claire sang, just imagine that he did come. You know, what happens? You know, 1 Thessalonians 4 describes the rapture of the church, and it says the dead in Christ shall rise first. Sometimes people simplify what happens. It's like, well, you die, you go to heaven. But if you study the Bible very much, you realize it's more complicated than that. You know, there are different dispensations. There are people that died during the tribulation, during the millennial kingdom. You know, it's a little more complicated just to say that. But at the rapture, people will be raised. Right now somebody dies, their spirit goes to be with the Lord, their body's in the grave. But when the Lord comes back, their body is raised. And so they reunite their spirit to be with the Lord during that 7-year tribulation. And the people that are alive will be translated without seeing death. It's called the rapture of the church. So we don't know when it is, but we know the Bible clearly teaches that one day that will happen. But imagine if that did happen. Imagine if we were part of that. You know, you can leave your glasses behind. Your bifocals will not be needed. You can leave your pills in the medicine cabinet. You know, you don't need all of the bandages and, you know, all the balm. And, you know, you won't need any of that because we'll have a glorified body. Just imagine what that would be like. You know, I appreciate all the condolences and so on for my mother passing on to be with the Lord. But it just occurred to me, what a moment, at an instant, to be with the Lord. What a moment that will be. So it is something to look forward to. And it's not quite connected to the sermon, but I think it goes along in some way with it. Jeremiah chapter 46 and verse 17. Now let me preface some of this by saying the book of Jeremiah gives many prophecies, and most of them are pretty dire. They're warnings of judgment. You know, there's a lot of negativity, and he's called the weeping prophet. He was maltreated. He was put in prison. He was put in a deep well. He almost starved to death. He ended up in Egypt and probably died in Egypt. So he really didn't get much acclaim other than what we give him, because we see what a great faithful prophet that he was. But the last several chapters, 45 through 52, there are 52 chapters, but the last several talk about the different nations around. It's not just Israel. Most of it, the book is condemning Israel because they brought in their false gods and failed to worship the Lord. There was, you know, they never turned from their sin. And they had some wicked kings along the way, and God warned them, judgment's coming, and they're holding on to the very end, and they just won't give up. And they never turn back to the Lord. But the last few chapters, he talks about judgment on some of the nations around. And so this is particularly about Egypt. The next to last two chapters in Jeremiah, he talks about Babylon, and they're the longest chapters. He has a lot to say about Babylon and the wealth. And, you know, it was a tremendous empire of great wealth. But at one time, so was Egypt. So this is in reference to Egypt. Verse 17. They did cry there. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, is but a noise. He hath passed the time appointed. And I want to take that little phrase, that he has passed the time appointed. God allowed Egypt to become a great empire. But he said, you have sinned and you've gone past the time where you had an opportunity to turn to me. You could have repented, but you refused to do so. So he's saying something to a nation that thought for many years, hundreds of years, was a world empire. And they thought this, you know, can never end. But, of course, it did end. I remember the first time I went to Israel, there were some folks that did a lot of traveling, and they had been to Egypt. And this was probably in the 80s. And they said, I'll never go back to Egypt. It is such a third world country. It is filthy, it is dirty, and they can't even describe some of the things that they saw there. Hardly a world empire. And today, still hardly a world empire. It was at one time. Now, we don't know the future of America. No one knows that. I know everybody has predictions, and they predict what will happen to the stock market. They predict, nationally, politically, all these things. People have different predictions. And it's real easy to be negative. It's real easy to say, well, everything is dire. But the truth is, we don't know. We just don't know what's going to happen to America. But this we know. There is a time appointed. America has been put where it is in the world scene for a period of time. But it's not forever. And I think a lot of people think it will be. It's going to be forever. You know, we'll have the affluence that we have now. It'll always be that way. There's no guarantee of that. Just someone could push a button, atomic bomb, nuclear bomb, hits the East Coast of the United States, that changes everything. That can happen in one moment. The rapture occurs, that changes everything. The chaos that occurs because of that could change everything. Now, we don't know, that may not happen. But we do know that there is a time appointed for all these different countries. And the nation that turns against God is playing with fire. So that much we know. To think a little bit about Egypt, I'm not sure how well studied everybody is on the history and the culture of Egypt, but Egypt was one of the greatest empires of all time. And it was seen as that. People would go to Egypt because they thought this is the place of prosperity. They if they could get into Egypt and be a part of the economy, a part of the culture, they would do that. And at one point, the empire went all the way up through Israel to Syria, to the Jordan, all the way south to Ethiopia, all the way over to Libya. And that all the nations around Egypt were buffers so that other nations could not just come in easily and conquer them. And that created a great amount of power and wealth. They traded with all these countries around and all over the world. And because of that, they became wealthy. And they had gold and so much collateral that everybody wanted to be part of Egypt. And because of their wealth, there are certain things that they did. And you could, I've never been there. I think it would be an interesting trip to see some of the things like the Sphinx, the pyramids. There are so many different huge temples and monuments that were built, going back, 2,500, 3,000 years and longer. I mean, if you've ever read or know anything about the pyramids, people don't even know today how in the world they ever put them together, how they did that, how they accomplished that. It was an unbelievable feat. So it was a tremendous, tremendous empire and power. Egypt had land. They had all the countries around were just puppet governments, and they controlled what they did. And everybody wanted to be in favor with Egypt. They had new weaponry. All their swords were made out of bronze. Everybody else, that was not the case. But they were powerful because they had the latest technology as far as weapons. They controlled the borders of their neighboring countries, which was a protection. So that they were at peace for hundreds of years. And the country did go up and down in prosperity and to some degree. But they had tremendous wealth that flowed into the country, and large crews put together building projects, and they hired them, used all that money. So it was a tremendous empire. Remember, it was Joseph that was sold into slavery that goes down into Egypt. And there he became very, very prominent. And the children of Israel come down, and they were spared because of the prosperity of Egypt. And then Moses led them out of Egypt, because Egypt was a picture of the world. It was a place where, you can trust in money, you can trust in the economy, You can trust in leaders. You know, you can put your trust in these physical things, but not trust in God. And that's what the picture we see of Egypt is. People would go down there thinking, this is the solution to all my problems. You know, people come into America and they think, when I get to America, that solves all my problems. That's not true. You know, that you bring your problems with you. You know, and if you got saved and your life's changed, then that solves a lot of problems. But people think, if I just go to a place of prosperity and I'm prosperous, but you're still a sinner. You still need the gospel. You still need to be saved. Jesus and his family went down into Egypt. They escaped. I mean, there are several reoccurrences where this type of thing happened. And even Jeremiah warned the remnant that were left after Babylon came in. And the Lord warned them through Jeremiah, don't go down into Egypt. You know, I'm telling you, just surrender and Babylon will let you stay in the land. But they ignored that warning. And others have tried to make alliances with Egypt because they thought this is the way to be prosperous. So Egypt is not necessarily seen as a good country in God's eyes, although they were very prosperous for a long period of time. But there was a time appointed.
Right.
And it ended. You know, there's a time appointed for all of us.
Right.
Ecclesiastes says there's a time for everything. And we might think life's going to go on and be perfect. You start out as a young child, your parents care for you, they take care of you. You don't worry about a whole lot of things. But as you get older, you see things happen. And there are problems and struggles and difficulties. And from that, you realize it's not all easy. And it helps us to see the importance of learning to trust our God, to look to Him. We need Him. If everything goes well, just keep in mind, it may not go well forever. So there's a time appointed for our country and America. And how long will she survive? How long will she continue on with wealth as it is now? Now, if you try to determine what country has the greatest amount of wealth, probably it's the United States of America. You know, the highest gross domestic product, GDP, of all the countries. But if you measure it per capita, we're like ninth. Per capita, some of the European countries have a higher percentage of the gross domestic of the wealth of that country per capita. If you measure China by that, you would say China's about 80th or 90th when it's per capita. But it's a big country. So China has, next to America, probably the largest economy. But it's a much larger country, too. Then you look at the average person in America and you say, you know, people, you know, they have everything they need. I mean, I realize there are groups that raise money and food share and different things like that. And there are, but by and large, our country is very, very wealthy. You know, and we, it was not always that way, but it certainly has been through most of our lifetimes at the very least. So we have a nation that Jeremiah is prophesying to them, not something they want to hear, but he said, his time has passed, the time that was appointed. There was a time that you crossed the line. There was a time when you refused, and the Lord said, that's enough. And it was the downfall of that nation. Now, Egypt was an empire for probably 30 centuries, 3,000 years, and sometimes more prominent than others. And it was still somewhat prominent during the time of Christ, but nothing like it was during Ramses II and two or three of the leaders of that period of time. So it was a powerful country. Babylon was a powerful country. One of the great wonders of the world was found in Babylon, the Hanging Gardens. They had tremendous industry and powerful, and they'd conquer different lands, and they thought, nothing will ever happen to us. We're too powerful. And they captured Israel, they brought them in and began training some of the leaders. We read about that in Daniel and the three Hebrew children. But their time was appointed. And Daniel, I think it's chapter 5, talks about Belshazzar is having a big feast, and they brought in all the vessels, all the goblets and things from the temple that they had captured. And he brought them in. They're drinking wine. They're having a big party. And there appeared just a hand writing on the wall.
Right.
And that becomes a cliche, so to speak, that the handwriting's on the wall. What it meant, their time was, your days were numbered and your time is going to end.
Right.
And the very night they called Daniel and he explained the writing, that very night Belshazzar was killed by the Medes as they came in. They had drained some of the canal that protected the castle, and they came under and through and conquered the nation. They thought, they're having a big party, everything's great, there's no problem. But there was a time appointed.
Right.
Individually, the Bible says, appointed to men once to die, but after this the judgment. So there's always going to be a day of accountability. What did you do with your life? Were you saved? Did you live for me? Did you serve me? So there is a time appointed. So what about our country? What about America? Consider the world looks at our country for leadership. We really do have great power within all the world. Now, I'm not so sure that happens with all of our leaders, and they're not all respected probably in the same way. But the truth is, the currency is based upon the dollar. That's American. There's so many things that are dependent on America. The support of NATO depend especially upon America. There are many countries, they depend upon money that America sends for various different needs of their country. There's no other country in the world that does what America does like that. And so America is viewed that, think about this, of all the illegal immigration that's going on, think about, why would anybody not try to immigrate out of the country? Why isn't everybody trying to go to Cuba? The boats come from Cuba, but they don't go to Cuba. Why isn't everybody trying to get into Mexico? You know that, because there's something in America where God has blessed this country for a time. For a time. But there are some storm clouds on the horizon. Our nation was built with an idea. And the idea is developed through the Constitution. And it was for the people, by the people. And that's a unique thing. And there are certain biblical grounds to the formation of our country. God has used America in a lot of very good ways for the world. Contrary to what people might say today, that, you know, we're, how awful this country is. If it was so awful, they would leave, but they don't. But it's a great country and a blessed country. But that doesn't mean it always will be. So our country has sent out missionaries all over the world. No other country. You know, England sent missionaries out for a period of time. And more recently, there are other, what used to be third world countries are sending missionaries. But no one has sent missionaries to spread the gospel like America, to fund them and send them out. I believe that God has blessed our country partly because of that very thing. And where churches are built and where righteousness was exalted. So all of that has been a very important part of our country. And you go back to the 1700s and the time of the Declaration of Independence and the foundation of our country at that time. Basically, people wanted to do good. They sought virtue. But we live in a day in America, a lot of people are seeking immorality to do their own thing. They seek freedom from morality, to do their own thing. I've read this before, and I'm sure some of you are already familiar with it. And there's some questions to how accurate this is. But nonetheless, it's true whether it was said exactly the way it was said. But the French diplomat, Alex de Tocqueville, is attributed to this statement. He said, "I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her commodious harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. I sought for greatness and genius of America in her fertile fields and boundless forests and it was not there. And I sought for the greatness and genius of America and her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America and her public school system and her institutions of learning, and it was not there. I sought for greatness and genius of America and her Democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution, and it was not there. Not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great.
Right.
Now, whether that's exactly what he said, or, you know, there's some controversy as to whether that's true or not, whether he said it or not, but it is true. I mean, I believe it. Sometimes people ask me, politicians sometimes ask me about the condition of our country, and I say, what's wrong? I said, it goes back to the pulpit.
Right.
And there are people who don't even go to church. They don't, you know, they don't claim to be a Christian, yet they say the same thing. You're right. It goes back to the importance of the gospel and giving out the gospel to people and taking a stand for what's right. That we have something that is going on in Davos, you've heard of that, and the World Economic Council. So all these people are meeting together, all these elites of the world. And basically what they're saying is, now, climate change is second place, because what we have to do is we have to silence false information. We have to silence people who are saying things that are not true. Well, who decides what's true and who's not true? Well, they do.
Right.
Just about everything at these elite meetings is totally wrong.
True.
Totally wrong. And don't erase this. Keep that on YouTube. Hopefully one of them will listen. But we live in a country such as people have the idea that I can do what I want, and they're not seeking God at all. They're not seeking the Word of God. They're not asking what is true, what is right. They're not doing that. They're living their own life. What do I get? What can you do for me? And, you know, everything that happens with politics, it's what do I get out of it? What's in it for me? That's kind of where we're at. And if someone said, I'm running for President of the United States, and whether our country's prosperous or not, no matter what anyone else thinks and what you get out of it, we need to turn to God, and we're going to seek righteousness in our country, they would laugh at him. That's not what people want. And that's the general nature of people. You see, nations and institutions can only go so long, and it seems like somehow the devil gets in there and they fall away. They compromise, they change, they seek evil. Look at the nation of Israel. How many times? Look at the judges. The book of Judges. You know that God blesses them. That boy, look, we're going great, and God's blessing. We're seeking God, and then they fall away. God comes in and judges them. And then they raise up another leader, and it's repeated over and over again in the book of Judges. Yeah, that's just the nature of people. So what is the problem in America? Is America's time of prosperity past? Is there opportunity to turn to him past? Now, it's really easy to be very critical, and I'm not trying to be cynical. Maybe it's not. There are places, especially in more rural areas and more in the South, it's very common that people go to church and they're more God-fearing. There's no doubt about it. We live in what's called a blue state. If you know what that means, it's very liberal, you know, less interested in the Bible. We live in a place where it is the least evangelical part of the United States. So don't judge the whole United States by our area. The truth is, I came here because I saw the need. It wasn't because I thought it would be easy. I came because I said, this is where the gospel's needed. And that's why others came to this area, that's what's needed. But it's happening all over the South, and people tell me in their churches now that it's no longer a Bible Belt. And maybe you could call it a church belt, because a lot of people still do go to church.
Yeah.
But if you were to take a survey, and this is totally unscientific, but We have about 45,000 people in this town. And there's about 20 churches. Now, if this was in the 1700s, do you know how many people would be going to church? 40 to 45,000 people. They would all be going to church. Just about. But let's assume that maybe every church in town ran 200. I think that's generous. I don't think that's probably accurate. But let's assume every church ran 200 attendants. That would mean 4,000 people would go to church on a single Sunday. One-tenth. One-tenth of the population. 90% don't go to church.
Right.
My guess would be it's half that. Now, I may be wrong. Again, it's not scientific. I didn't take a poll and I didn't do a study. But just from what I know, I think I'm probably not far off. If you go to Europe, it's less than 3% attend church on a regular basis. You say, well, you don't have to go to church to be saved. No, you don't. But if you're saved, people are going to be going to church. And it's evidence that people are not saved and they're not interested in the things of God. So if we look at the average of people attending church, something changed. What happened? There's a time when in this city, everybody went to church, and it was primarily the Congregational Church and the Plantsville Congregational Church, those two churches. And then there were some others. There was a Baptist church. There was a Methodist church. There was a Lutheran church, Episcopal church. I think when I came to town 150 years ago, there was maybe 9 churches in town. And the population was about 25,000, so about the same percentage. And I think more people went to church then. Now, what happened? Why so few people going to church? Because people are getting farther and farther away from God.
Right.
They're worshiping not a brazen altar, not the god Baal, but they're worshiping the almighty dollar and what money can buy and how far they can get ahead. That's what they're worshiping. There's not much difference, really, between Baal and what's happening with people today. So what is the need? I mean, again, I don't know what's going to happen in our country, and we may continue on, and maybe we'll not be part of the other nations that totally faltered. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is what I'm telling you, that it's not like it used to be. And there's a greater need than there's ever been. And I believe that God will judge a nation that is wicked. In Psalm 9 and verse 17, it says, the wicked shall be turned into hell and all the nations that forget God. So it's a pretty serious thing to turn against God. And that's basically what we're saying. By and large, people have turned against God. Thank God, not all. So what the need in America is that more people preaching the truth and warning people, handing out gospel tracts and printing literature, Christian schools and Bible colleges and Sunday school, all those things are the answer. That seems to the world ridiculous, but it is the answer. And by the way, as I said this morning, we are seeing, since COVID, more people humbling themselves before God and responding. People are mystified with religion and are looking for something real. And it's not just here. I've seen that throughout the country. So there is an opportunity for us. So there is, to Egypt, there was a time appointed and they went beyond. They went over the edge. And if we don't take advantage of that, maybe that would be the thing that takes us over the edge. That we never got the gospel out. We never witnessed. We never talked to enough people. So there are times that we can reflect in the past and Scripture. The two examples of the Lord's return that he uses is the times of Sodom and the days of Noah. Now, I remind you, in Sodom, they couldn't find 10 righteous people in Sodom. I don't know what the population was, but there was just no spiritual influence. In the days of Noah, it was only 8 souls saved. Probably there was a billion people on the earth. and eight souls out of it. So we're not quite identified in that same way as far as souls being saved. However, if the rapture occurred, that would be true. There would be very, very few believers here on the earth. So we're not in exactly the same situation, but we do see the tendency and the trend of the world is like the days both of Sodom and the days of Noah. So that means it's not all those people out there in the world living godlessly that's the problem. It's all of us in here that live comfortably and not concerned to reach those that are out there. I think that will be the determining factor. Are we burdened for others? Are we doing our best to reach into the gospel? And today you can't do it in mass, but you can do it one by one. To talk to everyone you can. Get an appointment with somebody. Befriend people. Bring up the topic and subject. So for America, the future is uncertain. We don't know. I mean, we really, no one knows. Somebody can say, well, that's the end of America. That no one knows that. Only God knows that. What we know is there is a time appointed. And it could be. That's why we need to turn to Him. It's not something you take a chance with. So the times reflect the godless society of Sodom and the days of Noah. And we see many similarities. We see that in our culture in America and many other countries, especially in the Western world. Thirdly, when we think about the future of America, America is not mentioned that we can prove in Scripture. It does not appear. So what happens in the end time? Why is America not mentioned? Why is it not a major part of all the things in Revelation that occur? It's possible we're part of it, but we're not mentioned. We don't know that we'll even exist. It might be that we're part of the European Union. It might be that, you know, we're part of the common market or all that's happening to unify with NATO. I mean, that's possible. But America is the most prominent country in the world, and yet we're not mentioned. I somehow feel probably we're not going to be that prominent at that time when the Lord comes back. And again, I don't know that. I'm just suggesting that that's very possible. You have to ask the question, what if America turned against Israel? This is interesting because we keep hearing this controversy in the news media. They talk about, oh, there are all these people for Israel. Why are they against Israel? Look at all the things that Israel's doing that's wrong and how vile and wicked they are. Of course, they don't know what they're talking about, but nonetheless, that's conversations going on. And what if America turned against Israel? The Abrahamic promise and covenant is still true that God will bless those that bless His people, you know, curse those that curse them. That's still true. That's a dangerous thing to turn against Israel. Because one day God is going to raise them up again. That'll accept Him as the Messiah. So, is America defeated? Is it ruined by another world power? Or is it? We don't know any of that. We don't know. Life may go on similar till the rapture, till the Lord comes, till you die and you go to heaven. We don't know. But we do know it's concerning where we're at. It's concerning that we can't find enough preachers to fill all the pulpits that are vacant. It's concerning that many churches never see one young man ordained to the ministry. It's concerning that in some churches they never have anyone saved or baptized. That's concerning. It's concerning that our churches are getting smaller and contracting. It's concerning that many churches are compromising and they're playing church, not living by what a church really should do. Where is America? We just know there's a time that is appointed. Has she passed that? We don't know. Is there a concern about it? Yes, there is a concern. What can we do about it? You can vote in your favorite president. That's not the answer. We get a governor that we like in our state. That's not the answer. We can watch the stock market double, triple, quadruple. That's not the answer. The answer when God's people pray. Get on our knees seek His face. And God empowers that church that's on their knees praying. And God empowers people and a nation that is a praying nation. And how could a nation survive without the aid of our God? I don't see how it's possible. But it's our responsibility. We have to do our part. We have to get involved. May God help us to do that. Let's bow for prayer.